spreading their message to millions. Spreading their message to millions. Kiss Talk. Talking Kiss. Kiss fans and Kiss podcast. With your host, Mike from Nashville. Tuck Watts. And special guest, it could even be you. Now here they are, your Kiss Talk crew.
All right, everybody, welcome back to a brand new episode of Kiss Talk. Super excited as always. This is a great actual time of Kistry for me. Tuck, welcome to Kiss Talk, man. What's going on?
Not much, man. Just trying to survive this summer heat that we're getting down here in Georgia.
Holy smokes. Yeah, I just kind of, it is brutal, even for me, somebody that really likes the heat. But I just try to walk out with a positive attitude and then just go, I would rather be dealing with this than it be 30 degrees because I can't stand the cold. So,
see, I would rather it be 30 degrees than need a shower just when you walk to your car in the morning.
Okay, we'll just agree to disagree. my wife's the same way. She's like, this is horrible. Give me 20 below. I'm like, no, can't do that. So, but anyway, man, I get to this point where I got to talk about Kiss all the time. And I mean, there's just kind of so much going on. First thing I want to mention is been kind of playing a little bit of email tag with Ed Spangenberg with the Click Tea Shop. I've tried to promote this as much as I can on Facebook, but, a big shout out to Ed. We did not connect and get him on the show prior to yesterday, which was kind of a big day. It was Eric Carr's birthday to begin with. The second part of that is that he worked with Loretta, Eric's sister, and got licensed 3 images to do 3 t-shirts. And I'm going to tell you, I love the t-shirts. I particularly love the smile. I think that's probably going to be one of the best Kiss t-shirts that I own. But hopefully, everybody knows it was Eric Carr's birthday yesterday, and hopefully you celebrated by going to Click Tee Shop and maybe picking out one of those Eric Carr t-shirts, because those are fantastic. Big shout-out to Ed and Loretta for making that happen. So
the whole line of shirts that those guys are doing over there are amazing.
They really are, and my assumption is if you're listening to this show, you probably are familiar with Click Tee Shops at this point. I've got the Peter Chris cat. I've got the talisman. There's another one. I love them because I can wear a Kiss t-shirt and it's not obvious. Only other Kiss fans will walk by you and go, great shirt, because they know what it is, right?
Right.
Very cool line of shirts. ClickTeeShop.com. Please go check that out and support him. He's got a lot more ideas. And he's been on every other Kiss and Kiss-related. I mean, there's some that aren't even Kiss podcasts that he's been on lately talking about the product. He's been at the last couple of expos, the Jersey, and I think I don't know if he was in Indianapolis or not. But he's also got a shirt on there for the Talisman, which is, you know, essentially Ace Frehley and Gene Simmons' backup band. And I think that's very cool. I'm going to grab one of their shirts. And speaking of that, we'll just jump right over to the Nashville Rockin' Pod. Not going to talk about it for 10 minutes like we did last time. But I think, Tuck, you've done a pretty good job of floating some media out there for that. You want to talk about the Nashville Rockin' Pod?
Man, here's the thing about Rockin' Pod is I love meeting these people that made the music that we grew up listening to. And you know, we've all done it where, you know, you go to these shows and you pay whatever it is to get in, $40 to get in a show. And then you got to pay $40 to stand in line and you get 2 seconds with a guy and he'll sign your auto, you know, your album. And, you know, you can walk off. Rock and Pod is nothing like that. Man, you get to meet all these guys. Who's going to be there? Michael Sweet, Dave Ellefson from Megadeth, guys from Kix, Roxy Blue, Every Mother's Nightmare, Exodus. The list goes on and on and on and on. You pay $20, get in, man, and you get access to all those people for $20, the price to get in. It's just amazing. Plus, you get all the podcasts. Chris has done a great job. Chris Cisnak over at Decibel Geek, who puts this all together, has done such a great job in the past. And with this year's festival, I know it's just going to be just lights out. It's just going to be so much better than it's been in the past, and it's been awesome in the past. So if you're going to be in Nashville, even if you're not going to be in Nashville, make it part of your plans to get to Nashville, to be part of Rockin' Pod, pay your $20, meet all these people, hang out with all of them. It's just a great time for everybody.
Absolutely. This is the pre-party is Friday night, August 9th, where you will have the Rock and Roll Residency playing, which, if you don't know, is actually the Talisman, is actually Ace Frehley's band, is actually Gene Simmons' band. I mean, more or less. So,
and we've talked to them in the past at the Gene Simmons Vault event in Nashville. Yeah. They were on the show on Classic Rock Drops talking about, you know, how cool that was to be playing with Gene. And that was before they had played with Ace, if you recall.
Yep.
And they were excited to get to play with Ace too at that time. So,
absolutely. And my understanding is that Michael Sweet will jump up and probably play a few songs, two or three songs maybe, with them on Friday night. So don't miss the pre-party on Friday night. So that is a separate ticketed event, and you can get tickets at nationalrockandpod.com.
But, yeah, and just announced, Tony Harnell is going to be there.
Yep, on Saturday for the main event, which is Saturday, August 10th.
Right.
And from TNT. This is at the Skid Airport Road. Marriott, Nashville. This is a Class A venue. The hotel is wonderful. I've been at many events at this location, and this is the biggest, the best that it's ever been done. You know, Chris, amazing job. The venue, amazing. We've certainly grown with this event from having it in a corner of a retail space year one to here year three is an amazing accomplishment by Chris. So thank you, Chris Cisnak, for all your effort. But we want to see you.
I never thought it would get better than the first year when I got to meet Raven, which you remember, I fangirled on that one.
Yeah, you did.
And I still, you know, just thinking about how cool it was to hang out with them. I've got a picture of me with Raven and Michael Wagner.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
I used to sit in front of a little bitty turntable that I got at Kmart. It had two little crappy speakers, you know, listening to Raven records and reading the liner notes on albums and seeing, you know, Michael Wagner's name. I never dreamed that I would just be standing there. They got their arms around me, you know, and it was just amazing. Oh, my gosh. And this year is going to be even better. So.
Very cool stuff. So we hope to see you there, of course. So on to a couple of things here to get to the Kiss Talk portion of this thing. I am in the midst of a big 40th anniversary for me, and that's the Dynasty Tour. And you can say what you will about the success of Dynasty, the Dynasty Tour, all the crap that was going on. And as a 13-year-old kid in 1979, I did not care. I did not know. Only thing that mattered to me is that on June 30th in Atlanta, Georgia, at about 9 o'clock p.m., after seeing the band New England.
Produced by Paul Stanley. The first record.
I was in the same room with four of the most incredible, I don't know, man. At that point for me, they were literally Super Kiss. I loved the whole costume thing. I loved the over-the-top element, that larger-than-life feel, you know? I mean, you know, they release a song on side four of Alive 2, Larger Than Life. And for me, they truly were. So I can still remember sitting there in horrible seats in the Omni. I didn't care. Didn't matter. I was in the same room. I remember thinking that. Man, I'm in the same room. So the lights go out. You guys have all seen the video of this show. The four colors hit the fog, and the risers come up, and there they are. To me, I mean, that is stuck in my mind forever. That event, you know, and then the lights kind of change. The focus comes off of Ace so he can kind of move on down the curved ramp. Because they kick in to King of the Nighttime World as an opening song. And, you know, I mean, for me, it didn't matter how bad they sounded. I didn't realize it. I was just in another place because that was the first time I got to see these guys. And they could have done no wrong. I don't remember anything being wrong. I don't remember being disappointed to any degree. I know that there were things that I missed just because I thought there was so much going on. And we compare that to the stage that's on, you know, that's on the road today with the End of the Road tour. Now, today's stage is to me, is a never stop. You got to see it more than once kind of show because you're like, oh man, I didn't even see that happening last time. But and knowing that the 1979 show was nowhere near what we're seeing today. But as a 13-year-old man, I just could not take my eyes off the magnitude of Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, Peter Criss, and Ace Frehley on stage in those big, giant costumes. Amazing stuff. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about is not necessarily the Atlanta show, but kind of, because Tuck and I have been discussing this a little bit, and we've kind of figured out that... as I looked through Julian Gill's book and I accidentally pulled up one of the set lists from another Dynasty show, is how much the set list actually changed is understandable because of crowd reaction. However, me getting to see one of the front end shows of this thing, I got to see the show as I feel like it was intended because they had just released the solo albums, you know, the prior year. And the set list that I saw was King of the Nighttime World, Radioactive off of Gene Simmons' solo album. Next was Move On off of Paul Stanley's solo album. Then Calling Dr. Love, Firehouse, New York Groove off of Ace Frehley's solo album. I Was Made for Loving You off the brand new Kiss album. Love Gun, 2000 Man off the brand new Kiss album. Tossin' and Turnin' off of Peter Criss' solo album. Then God of Thunder, Shout It Out Loud, Black Diamond, Detroit Rock City, Beth, and Rock and Roll All Night. So, if you think about how we've gotten into this discussion of this rut on this discussion of Kiss set list never changing, man, think about that as a... I mean, in Paul, if Paul looked at this set list today, he goes, man, that set list had to be so disappointing because it didn't appeal to the masses. We didn't play all our regular songs. And I think, to a degree, if you listen to Podcast Rock City's last episode where they talk about the 80s and they talk about the set list that they did in the mid-80s, and then they kind of talk about how the set list changed for Hot in the Shade, if you'll remember, the big thing about the tour for Hot in the Shade was we all noted they went back to their roots. They brought back Deuce and, you know, a lot of those. They opened with I Stole Your Love because in the mid-80s, they weren't. They were playing mid-80s stuff, and we'll definitely talk about that another day. But Yeah. But when you look at the 1979 set list, I mean, how crazy is it that you look back at what they were playing on tour for Love Gun, Rock and Roll Over, etc. And then all of a sudden you go see Kiss, and not only is it a shock that the last album was different as far as the core fans went, their look had changed, and now they were playing six new songs. So, I mean, you compare that to what we live with today, and it's just so different. So, you know, Tuck, I mean, I know you obviously didn't see this tour. You're a few years younger than I am. But knowing the history of Kiss, knowing these songs, does this set list even have any appeal to you? Would it have been cool to see it just because it was the solo stuff? Is that the only factor? Kind of talk about it.
Well, as I explained to you earlier off air, that – while I didn't see this tour, the first ever bootleg video that I ever got was the Largo show. So I do have some affection for this set list and this time. I mean, of course, at this time, you know, you had, it was a great time to be a Kiss fan. Maybe one of the better times in history to be a Kiss fan, because they were, had just been, you know, named the biggest band in America by whoever that was, Gallup or whoever.
Yeah.
You had the solo records, you had Alive 2, you had Double Platinum, the Kiss cards, you had the comic book, Kiss Meets the Phantom. I mean, it was a great time to be a Kiss fan. So as, you know, and we've talked about how when you are a fan of a period like that, you always have some affection for that. Now, looking at this from a Kiss fan perspective, today, you know, I would have probably, you know, today I would be disappointed, I think, in maybe some of the songs. I don't think Tossin' and Turnin' was the best song on Peter's solo record.
I don't either. So let's stop for just a second. So the Largo show was July 8th. They were still running with this set list at that time, because right. The set list didn't start changing until July 18th in Cleveland, when Gene and Paul pulled out Radioactive and Move On. They left in New York Groove and Tossin' and Turnin' for a couple more days, and then eventually Tossin' and Turnin' was removed. And then they ran with New York Groove because of its radio success. So I just wanted to kind of throw that in. But yes, right. Tuck's talking about July 8th, Largo show. So go ahead.
Yeah, they replaced Radioactive eventually with Let Me Go Rock and Roll. Yep. And Move On, they replaced with Making Love, which that kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to, obviously you're going to give Gene a song and, yep. and Paul a song. So that's that exactly. kind of makes sense to me. And that kind of, in all honesty, as I look at the set list here, and I'm looking at the one from Largo, I think one of the things that probably hurt it was Radioactive happening second.
You know,
it's probably not the best place in the set list for that song to show up.
Well, and I remember when I saw this show, it wasn't that it surprised me that Radioactive was there. What surprised me was Move On was right behind it, and they didn't follow Radioactive with a hit, a popular hit. The fact yeah. that they paired two solo songs together. And I remember being surprised that Paul's playing Move On. I just thought, man, there's so many better songs on that album. Now, a lot of people love Move On, and I do too. But I just I agree with you. The same thing with Peter's. I mean, why do Tossin' and Turnin'? Is that something that Paul and Gene made him do that song instead of Hooked on Rock and Roll that everybody seems to love so much? I don't know.
Was that the single off his solo record?
Yeah.
It was, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know that should have mattered, but I guess it did. So, anyway.
And you know, in all honesty, you have two different things happening here. Because after they play Tossin' and Turnin', they go into the bass solo in God of Thunder. They do the drum solo as they always did during God of Thunder. Shout It Out Loud, Black Diamond. Then the encore, Detroit Rock City, Beth, and Rock and Roll All Night. I mean, that's pretty stereotypical right there. So the first, you know, 10 songs is where they really change things up. But from that point on, it was a pretty standard Kiss show, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was. I was just kind of looking at some of Julian Gill's notes. If you don't have Julian Gill's Kiss on Tour book, I encourage you to get that. It is my encyclopedia that replaces my memory because I can't remember half the stuff most of the time. But it's noted as far as that particular show that I saw, that New England, that was their first date opening, and that Paul had produced their initial album. And that it was 16,700 people. So I felt like, you know, there was a ton of people there. They had two dates scheduled in Atlanta, and the second one got canceled. That was assumed because of low ticket sales. So, and I don't even recall that being a thing. So that's one of those things that I would have never remembered because I'm not sure I even knew it. But
what was the ticket price?
You know what? I posted that the other day. What was it? Was it 13 bucks or $9 or something?
Maybe. Yep. How many did you say was there? Because the Wikipedia list.
16,700 is what Julian has listed for that show.
All right. So the Wikipedia listed the attendance for a basketball game, 16,378. So it was pretty full.
Yeah. So, and if you look at the shows around it, the show before it was in Asheville, and it only did 5,000. The show after it was in Greensboro, and it did 10,000 out of a 15,000 size venue. So, and I mean, that's, it really is. When you look at the attendance for these shows, it is up and down throughout. So because they had two separate Largo shows that were back to back, it looks like, and neither one of them were sold out, but, in any case, you can check out all the details. There's a huge write-up on the Largo shows in Julian's book here, so you can check that out. But just kind of getting back to, you know, the experience of getting to see the Dynasty Tour, I think that mirrors being able to see some of the 80s shows because, I mean, there are songs that were done in those 80s shows which they wouldn't even begin to touch today, number one, because they don't really support the Bruce Kulick era in any depth. And also because, you know, Paul's voice was at a height, right? It was at its best ever during the 80s. If you like that, I mean, I love the fact that Paul Stanley could hit notes that were out of this atmosphere. What about you? Did you like that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was, you know, that's when Paul Stanley sort of earned his place in rock and roll history, I think, is when, I mean, he was at the top of his game at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, he was the greatest rock and roll singer of all time at that point, the greatest front man. I didn't think, and I'm prejudiced, I'm sure, but I don't think that anybody could touch where Paul was at that point. I mean, you even, for some reason, of course, you know, there's a million to one. There's Love Me to Hate You off of Hot and Shake. I mean, I know there's King of the Mountain. I mean, there's all those songs where he just hit some unbelievable range. I don't know. It's just fantastic.
And you know, one of the songs, I actually don't like the song so much, but My Way, what a powerful vocal performance. It's a great song.
Yeah. And I do love the song, and you don't care for it, and that's okay. But the song itself has some great, like you say, the performance is amazing. Yeah. So, trying to stick with the you know, this Dynasty theme, and it's a simple personal celebration of my 40th anniversary of my first Kiss show that I wanted to talk about, and just kind of run through, you know, the concept of this set list. And Tuck, you were kind of in the middle before I rudely interrupted you. You were kind of talking about, you know, Radioactive. That was Gene's single, and that was probably the appropriate song to be a single. I'm not sure that they couldn't have, you know, if the money had been behind in any level of success, that maybe there couldn't have been something off of there, you know, like See You in Your Dreams. I don't know. A lot of people don't like stuff like that. But I think that while Gene's solo album is technically, by my scientific system that I used, Gene's solo album is at the bottom two of my Kiss albums that I like. There's some tracks on there I really like. I love Man of a Thousand Faces. I think that is an amazing song, and especially knowing why he wrote it, because of his love of, you know, monster films and things like that. But then you do look at Paul's album, and you know, the single was Hold Me, Touch Me, right? Which, right. You know,
you can't play that live.
I wouldn't want to play it studio. But I always thought when I first heard that, and you got to believe, you understand that at this point, Paul Stanley is my absolute rock and roll hero guy. So, I mean, when I first hear that song, I'm like, oh man, it's kind of nasally. It's just not what I want.
Well, and here's another thing you gotta probably think about what's going on. And I, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but you know, imagine you're in charge of Kiss, and you've got four records you've got to push. I don't think you really want to push the same song for, you know, same type of song four different times. So I think they may have probably been looking at which of these songs, all right, you've got these four characters, which of these songs on each record sort of defines the character. Radioactive is a, you know, a classic Gene type song.
I agree.
I mean, it fit perfectly with, you know, yeah, God of Thunder and then later War Machine. But I mean, it defined his character.
Yeah.
New York Groove was classic Ace. I mean, that,
yeah,
you look at Ace's character, and that could have been a space theme song, I guess, but New York Groove was, you know, was Ace.
Right.
And tossing and turning. I mean, Peter always talked about, you know, Levin, how his fascination with the oldies and, right, and all that stuff. So maybe that was it. And so a ballad from Paul pushed the lover character. You know, I remember the poster, you know, of him laying on a big purple bed holding a glass of wine or something.
Right.
And, you know,
I've got that poster somewhere, but yes, I'm
not hanging on the wall, preferably.
No, it's not.
But, you know, so maybe that was probably in the thought of why that song was the single, because it was different from the other songs, and it would have given Kiss or Radio four very different songs. You had the hard rock of, you know, Radioactive, which by today's standard, it's not hard rock, but by 1978 standards, I'm pretty sure that was, I mean, I remember, you know, that evil chanting thing going on before and going, oh my gosh, maybe they are Knights in Satan's service.
And I get that. I mean, it was the right leadoff single, but Gene's diversity on this solo album, I think should have been, they should have like given that, I don't know, some boost, because you see some, I mean, See You Tonight, See You in Your Dreams, you know, I don't know that you really could have marketed Mr. Make-Believe or Man of a Thousand Faces. Living in Sin, you know, my wife hears that song play sometimes in my rotation and stuff. She's, that's the goofiest song ever. Really? Living in Sin at the Holiday Inn. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. because Kiss can do no wrong. I have to support them regardless of what I really think.
And if you remember when I did my Rogue Classic Rock Drops, you know, I led off with True Confessions.
That's true. Yep. So I think we're in agreement. Gene nailed it as far as a leadoff single and probably the right song to play live. For me, I understand your theory on Paul, but I think you take, to me, I don't know, you lead off every other Kiss album with Paul Stanley songs 99% of the time for a reason. And if I look at, I'm looking at the album track list, it opens with Tonight You Belong to Me.
All right. Which is a great opener.
Great opener. Great song. Move On, second song. Not a bad song. Not at all. I mean, I'm just saying it falls in my number twos on this album. There's Ain't Quite Right. And then Wouldn't You Like to Know Me? Why would you not pick that one? I mean, yeah, that's a great live anthem type song. I mean, and then you got It's All Right, and Love in Chains, and then, of course, Goodbye. But I just think, man, I'm not sure Move On was the right song. I mean, you got to, if you're going to play those two songs back to back and expect momentum and not be changing and pulling it out of the set list, what is it, almost 4 weeks into the tour, I think you got to play your cards right on that, and I don't think they did. So okay, I've established what I think on that. And then they did Calling Dr. Love and Firehouse, and then they were right back to a new solo song, which was New York Groove, which was starting to, I think, gained some ground at this point. People liked New York Groove. They liked it live. You know, Ace had his, you know, guitar effect that was cool. So people liked that, and they could sing along to it pretty easy.
Right. And you're talking about the guitar effect with the lights strobing across.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, let's not forget here, that's a cover song. Okay.
Right. The band Hello recorded it.
Yeah. So Ace has a cover song, which even today we know that he still does.
And that song had actually also been Hello's version of that song charted in the U.S. It rose up number 13 or so, I believe,
right,
in the U.S. So in 1975, so it had been a hit, you know, just a few years prior from another, you know, by another band.
Right. But I mean, fortunately, even when we hear New York Groove today played at, you know, Times Square for New Year's Eve and everything else, it's Ace's version that usually gets played. So I think that's exciting for him, that he has that legacy kind of attachment. So then we kind of move over. We're playing the first release off of Dynasty, which is I Was Made for Loving You, which I always liked that song, never bothered me. Then my favorite Kiss song was Love Gun, always is, always will be. I believe it's Paul Stanley's as well. And then we go to another cover song that Ace Frehley recorded on Dynasty, which is 2000 Man. And I think most of us have gone back and listened to the Rolling Stones do their version of 2000 Man and are very thankful that Ace Frehley redid this song for history. So nobody has to go back and listen to the Stones version. I have no idea what they were thinking when the Stones recorded it.
Well, they were high. So maybe you don't know this, but apparently when you're high, you don't make the best decisions. I imagine that played into that greatly.
I'm just thinking, when you're putting your album together, somebody needs to have their head on straight, because it must have been the producer, the engineer, the record company, and the band that all were high at the same time.
They were all high.
All right. So after 2000 Man, so isn't King of the Nighttime World, King of the Nighttime World, isn't that a cover song?
Yes. Kim Fowley, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So now we're into, that is one, two, three. We're into the fourth cover song that Kiss is doing on this set list, which is Tossing and Turning. Which is on Peter Criss' solo album, which, you know, I mean, yes, it was the single. That was a mistake for me. I mean, if I'm Peter Criss, I'm kind of going, look, if we're going to do this, let's just do it. And you throw out, wait a minute, was Tossing and Turning the single, though? Or,
well, there were actually two. I just had it up on.
Because he released Hooked on Rock and Roll, didn't he?
He released what?
Didn't he release Hooked on Rock and Roll?
The singles were Don't You Let Me Down and You Matter to Me.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
So Tossing and Turning wasn't even one of the singles.
You're right. Hooked on Rock and Roll is on the back side of one of those singles, though. See, guys, I can't remember crap. So you can make fun of me and send me messages. It's okay. At least I admit it. But, yeah, so Tossing and Turning gets played, which I liked that song at the time. I remember it being one of the songs that I listened to, because Peter's album grew with me over the years. I love Don't You Let Me Down. I love Can't Stop the Rain. I never liked Hooked on Rock and Roll until recently. There's so many podcasts out there that talk about how much they love that song, and I've heard it so much now that it's kind of like, yeah, okay, I get it. It's a decent song. But it, by far, to me, is not a song that I go to and listen to every day. I would much rather...
I love that song. I love the line, I was vaccinated with a Victrola needle.
Right. And it's...
Because...
everybody says that.
We were. Right?
Yeah. So I get it. Lyrically, it's a cool song. For me, I loved Peter's voice. And when I got to go see him a couple years ago at his so-called last singing event, it was those songs... for me, that really sounded good, that his heart was in, that connected with the crowd, you know. You know, you matter to me. And I don't know. That was his groove. That was, to me, kind of where he belonged. So, anyway, he plays Tossing and Turning, which was a crowd killer. It just was. And then, like you said, they went on to do God of Thunder, Shout Out Loud, Black Diamond, Detroit Rock City, Beth, and Rock and Roll All Night. So, but nevertheless, still one of my all-time favorite shows. You know, it seems like a lot of times, and as I look back and then I listen to other people talk, it is the times when people thought Kiss was at their worst is when I seem to have appreciated and liked what I saw more. And that's really weird because, I mean, it's like people say, well, yeah, the Dynasty show sounded awful. When you listen to those Dynasty rehearsal recording tapes that were recorded in Lakeland, I was listening to them the other day, and my wife says, what are they doing? And I said, they're rehearsing. And she goes, they sound awful. And I go, well, there is a reason why they rehearsed. But I don't remember when I saw them on June 30th. It never played in my 13-year-old mind. And I was already playing in my own little band at that point, so it's not that I wasn't familiar with music. But, I mean, sounded great to me. It was amazing. Right.
Well, and we also know now that the band was at that point horribly fragmented.
Yeah.
There was very little interaction, you know, off stage between the members.
So, you know, when they're doing that rehearsal show, when they get to Tossing and Turning, you know, Paul's doing kind of this, I don't know, it seems like he's trying to aggravate Peter, where he says, this next song is off Peter Criss's solo album. It's Peter Criss from Peter Criss's solo album. And then Peter goes, thanks, Paul. Like, you can stop doing that now.
Right.
So, I mean, there's obviously some tension right there just in that rehearsal where they're like, and then there's another point where Ace is supposed to be changing his guitar quickly. And Paul's going, and this is Ace Frehley, and he's changing his guitar as fast as he possibly can, wasting as little time as possible, because he's supposed to be starting the next song. So it seems like he's kind of picking on Ace a little bit, but more so Peter at that particular moment as they were rehearsing Tossing and Turning. But
well, and that also would make sense because Peter was out of the band.
Basically, he was ready to go. I mean, you know, that's... wasn't much
and you know those conversations are taking place, maybe not in front of Peter, but I'm pretty sure Gene, Paul, Ace, Bill,
yeah,
Sean Delaney, I guess, still in the picture at that time, are having this conversation that Peter's out the door.
Yeah, because I think Peter's already talking, I'm leaving, I'm gone. I mean, you know, he's kicking over his drums later. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, he basically did his contractual stuff. And was out of there. So,
and that's difficult. I mean, I've never been through anything. Well, yeah, I've left jobs, you know, and those last, you know, those 2 week notices, they're tough. And I'm sure, you know, for Peter, you know, you've got like a 6 month notice. You've got a,
yeah, I mean,
that's gotta be tough.
Yeah. You're right.
I've got a friend going through a divorce now, and you know, they're still in the same house, and he talks about how very hard that is for him at this time, because there's... So you could only imagine when your livelihood, the money you're making, the legacy you've built, all that's tied to this negativity that's going on.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's, you know, like I say, This was my podcast episode to celebrate my 40th anniversary in seeing Kiss. So I don't know that I have much more to say about it other than when I see the Dynasty cover, when I see images of the Dynasty era.
I love the poster and the straitjackets.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff just has a special place for me. I recently bought the special edition green vinyl. And I took it out of the box, and I went in there to my wife, and I go, you're going to share a special moment with me, because 40 years ago, I opened this album, I pulled out this poster, and I put this album on, And it wasn't the first album that I had bought myself. I think Kiss Alive 2 was the first album that I actually went to the store and bought. But it was already out. But Kiss Dynasty is the first one that I walked into Record Bar in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in Eastgate Mall, and the day it came out. And you know that feeling if you lived during that time where you went to the record store and you couldn't wait. They opened the door and you went in and you just looked at the new albums that were out and you go, where is it? Where is it? There it is.
And another thing about those times is, you know, I didn't, and I don't think you did either. I mean, you didn't grow up wealthy, so you had to mow grass or you had to take out the garbage for a month to get the money.
Right.
And that was all the money you had. So you're spending everything you got to get that one record.
Yeah.
And it's got to be good.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was like $6.99 was what I paid for the album. Most of the albums I bought around that time were in that ballpark. But yeah, I believe it was $6.99 at Record Bar. You couldn't wait. You walked in and you looked around, you knew what the album cover looked like because you saw all the pre-marketing stuff. And there it is. You get to pick it up and you're holding, you know, that 12 by 12 or 13 by whatever an actual album cover is. And you look at the picture, you turn over, you look at the songs on the back and you're like, man, I cannot wait. It's not like you could run out to the car unless you had a cassette player, because those were kind of in play at that time. I didn't do cassettes. I did albums because of the visual factor and the stuff that came with the albums. If you bought the cassette, you didn't get the free poster. You didn't get the merchandise thing inside where you could order more stuff. But, you know.
Like the Kiss radio that you would have been disappointed when you got it because you realized it didn't just play Kiss songs?
I never thought it was going to just play Kiss songs, and I didn't get it. I actually didn't buy it. I bought it from somebody else later. I didn't order anything off of that order form, I don't think. I think the only thing that I actually ever ordered off one of those forms was the 78 tour book, if I remember correctly. Looking at the stuff that's on that order form, I wish I'd ordered that stuff. There's some cool stuff on there that is really rare and limited today because that was the only place you could get it. It wasn't like mass produced. And at the show, I bought the Dynasty tour book, and my mom bought me. They used to have the little Kiss logo gold necklace. It had a little insert in the little plastic box of the Love Gun album. So I still have that. So I got the Kiss necklace and I got the Dynasty tour book. I also got a T-shirt when I went. However, years later, my religious grandmother threw my T-shirt away. But in any case, when I got that new Dynasty album and I took it into my wife, said, you have to re-experience this with me. So I opened the album and I took the stuff out and, you know, the smell of the vinyl and that kind of thing. It's just, I made it a moment because I remember doing the exact same thing and how much it meant to me 40 years ago.
I'm trying to remember the sleeve, the original inner sleeve. It had the lyrics on it, didn't it?
Yeah, and then on the back side, it's got the famous multicolored rainbow Kiss logo, which I every day is on my iWatch. That's like when I lift my arm today, that Kiss logo with that blue, red, green, and purple shows up. I see that every day. I had that on the back of my phone at one point. And I don't know if it was at the vault or if it was at a meet and greet with Gene in Knoxville. You know, when I was taking a picture, he says, "Oh, the Dynasty logo." And I said, "Yep, I love that logo." So, I mean, it's cool that he remembers, you know, where stuff comes from too. I mean, because he sees a lot of licensed stuff. But anyway, the month of Dynasty, the summer of Dynasty for me, big deal. So I appreciate everybody allowing me to talk it out on the podcast. And I hope that everybody has a, you know, if it's not a Kiss album or a Kiss tour moment, that there's some, whether it's, you know, whether that you saw a rat on Invasion of Privacy Tour, you know, or Billy Squire, or, you know, somebody that you have one of those moments that you kind of carry through with, I got that album, I saw them for the first time on tour, you know, and that's a moment for me that I can relive so in depth because it was so important and so memorable. So,
right. Awesome. Awesome stuff.
Good deal. So, I don't think I really have, much other things to talk about. I did think of something a few minutes ago. I was trying to think of
that's while happened. You're doing it. Did they ever play King of the Nighttime World first ever again?
Yeah, so there you go, trying to test my memory again, and
I don't know that they did.
I don't know that they did either, because, you know, what keeps defaulting in my mind is when they would open with I Stole Your Love. Yeah. You know, we know that they've opened with Love Gun.
Creatures,
Detroit Rock City, and, I mean, so on down the way. But I don't recall that one. So.
Yeah. But, and I wonder how much of this affected... Because, and this is probably, I'm probably way off base here, because they did continue to sort of play with the set list throughout the 80s, but I wonder how much of, you know, the reaction or the lack of reaction to some of those songs sort of made, you know, them realize, hey, you know, we don't need to play with this too much.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how much of that still comes into effect to this day, you know, goes back to that tour where... You know, when we tried that, it didn't get the great reaction. But again, they still did that through the 80s. So I don't know. I may be way off base with that kind of random thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, they looked for a certain crowd reaction and they saw it dying out and they saw no chart success on the three other solo singles. Yeah, I mean, it's got to play into it a little bit. And the success of the tour was not... was obviously way up and down as you look across some of these. It's really kind of weird how you look at one market and it was really low. Then you look at another and it sold out. So, I mean, just.
Well, yeah. And you also, if you think back to that time, you know, you're talking 1979, summer of 79, you've got the oil crisis, I believe, going on. You know, you've got high inflation. You've got some economic things happening during the Carter administration there that probably play into that too.
Sure. Could be. So I want to touch on a few like Kiss news items just here to kind of scan across a few things. One of the cool ones for me is that the Demon Funko cereal is now out. I don't know if that excites anybody else. I think it's kind of cool. They distributed those solely through FYE stores, and you can now get that online at FYE, which is For Your Entertainment. But the name of it, they call the store FYE. They used to be in all the major malls, and now it's very limited. There is not one here in the Middle Tennessee area. They are around.
I think they used to be called Camelot at one time.
I didn't realize it. Actually, Camelot became FYE, but that's cool to know.
I believe that's the case. I may be wrong.
So I had a friend over in Knoxville pick me up a few boxes, and so I'm secure. I will open one box. I will taste the cereal, and I will take the little Funko dude out of it because there's a Gene Simmons Funko figure inside each box.
So it looks to me like red blueberry.
So somebody who's already opened it said it's a berry flavored cereal. So who knows? I mean, Funko has been doing cereals for everything from Power Ranger to whatever for years. And distributing them in different venues. I think you can even get some of them on Amazon. So I don't know how the quality of the product actually is. And, you know, as a Kiss fan, how many crappy quality products do I own? So it doesn't really matter to me. I just think it's cool that this is a product that I actually was able to get. Because, you know, I never got the Kiss ice cream from Australia. You know, I mean, there's been food products put out by Kiss that have not been obtainable easily in the United States. So, I'm happy this is out. I hope
those Gene Simmons sodas though are pretty awesome.
Gene Simmons brand sodas are really good. I actually still have a few of those.
Yeah.
So.
The money bag sodas, I think they're
one. Yeah, yeah, not necessarily the Kiss Rocket Fizz sodas. They're okay at best. But, you know, this our sister podcast, Classic Rock Drops, gave away many of those. And then in different news, I love Tommy Thayer's new Electric Blue Les Paul that he's playing. I think it's a beautiful guitar, and you can buy one of those for $3,500 at any live show. That's a stage-played guitar. I think that's reasonable, cool, and Tommy's a great guy. So just some notes there. Trying to thank the tour, obviously, moving through Europe. How anybody can actually say anything bad about the tour, I don't know how anybody does. I mean, they're blowing it out over there on their actual solo dates, and, of course, you know, it's like people say, when they're playing these big festivals, it's not like everybody's leaving at the end of the night because they don't want to see Kiss. So, I mean, I've seen, like, some of the stupidest posts. It's like, yeah, well, there's only 60,000 people at that show because it's a festival show. Well, Kiss is headlining it, so everybody could left if they didn't want to see it. So, okay. And it doesn't seem to be happening. But so I think one of the cool... Go ahead.
And one thing I brought up to you, I think I texted you this, but Ace said that Kiss didn't sell out MSG because he wasn't, you know, in the band.
Right.
But then Ace played New York City a while back with Rat and didn't sell out. So I wonder, shouldn't he have sold out if Kiss, I'm just trying to follow his logic. And
right. I get it. I get exactly what you're saying. But I don't think Ace looks at it that way. Ace looks at it like, no. And if I was with Kiss, I would sell out.
Yeah.
So, no, I love Ace, man. But, he does come up with some crazy moments.
Yeah. I just found that interesting that, I don't know. And he does play up there quite a bit. So that probably plays. You know, Kiss comes through there once every couple of years, but Ace is there. Seems like he's playing a show in that vicinity, you know. And you know, growing up down here in the South, you know, it's not the same, you know. New York, I don't want to say they're spoiled. I'm not calling out my friends in New York. But, man, you guys are just so lucky because there's so many different opportunities to see these bands, you know, within an hour's drive.
Yeah. Seems like it anyway. Seems like they've had a lot of special occasions that they could go attend.
Yeah. So,
well, you know, I thought one of the really cool facts that the Kiss FAQ guys were pointing out, I think it was them anyway, is there's only been like a couple of shows that have not featured Rock and Roll All Night. And the guys, I believe it was over in Germany, they had to cut a show short because of thunderstorms and lightning, which means they didn't make it through the whole set, which means Rock and Roll All Night was not played. So I think that's one of those cool factor things. It's kind of like, yeah, I was at a show where Rock and Roll All Night was not played, just because they're so few and far between. So, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Of course, the Funko Pop little figures, you know, those have shipped to about everybody now. The German double platinum and best of the solo albums have made their way out. Everybody started getting those. I did not get the best of the solos, but wish I had. I did get the double platinum silver vinyl. It's really cool. Has the platinum album in it. You know, it's cool that some of that stuff's being reissued. I wish they wouldn't limit it to Germany and stuff like that. Why they do that to us, I don't know.
Especially today when things are so available.
Yeah.
You know, it makes no sense with a global economy to.
Right. Because, I mean, we just have to pay more for it to get it here. I mean, that's basically what the scenario is. So, I mean, I know all that stuff is kind of old news. But I'm trying to think. Of course, they're heading back to the States. Tuck and I are going to hit the road and discuss that here pretty soon.
They've got some Japanese dates they've released.
Yep, which are kind of winding up. I figured they wouldn't go to Japan till after Christmas, but it looks like they're trying to jump on that before Christmas, right?
Yeah.
Yep, and try to wind that out. So that basically means in 2020, it's going to certainly leave them a ton of secondary markets in the U.S. It's going to leave South America. But doesn't that mean that they've already covered everywhere else if they're hitting Japan? Major markets.
Yeah, I don't know where else you're going to go unless they do go to China or, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe they're contemplating those special places like that. But, I mean, they pretty much tagged everybody over there in this last run and then, you know, throwing in Japan at the end of the year. I kind of feel like, man, they really did a huge world swing and they've left a lot ahead of them for North and South America for 2020. And there's, you know, I don't know if you've listened to some of the stuff. I mean, there's talk of and I think there's some not clarity on it, but, you know, going back to Las Vegas again later and some of that stuff. So in Gene's recent interview. But you can check all that out. It's all out there on their Facebook page. They've been releasing that stuff. So I don't think I have anything else that I need to talk about immediately. What about you, Tuck? Anything at the top of your mind? I lost you a little bit there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think we've covered just about everything that I had been thinking about. So
yeah. So anyway, I thank everybody again for hanging in there with me and let me relive my Dynasty summer. If you got something that you want to talk about, if you have a special KISS moment that you want to come on the show and share, please do that. And again, please go to clickteeshop.com and support Ed over there. He's done some amazing work, man. Great stuff. Tuck and I got a few kind of cool surprises coming up. Tuck's actually going to geographically join me here in the next couple of weeks. And we'll have some special guests on and some special topics that we've got in store. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm headed off to Italy, and I hope I find a record store that has something cool in it because that's kind of my goal when I go somewhere that I'll probably never get to go again.
So where what part of Italy are you going to?
We're going to Florence, Venice, of course, Rome. I'm leaving out something. Tuscany. So, but there's bound to be a record vinyl store somewhere over there.
Yeah. So somebody listen to this on Facebook will know and can post maybe some suggestions.
That'd be a great idea, Tuck. Yeah. Go to our Facebook page and tell me where to go where I might find something out of the ordinary. Anything.
There's probably a bunch of people out there wanting to tell you where to go. Yeah. But we're talking about record stores in this case.
We are. So when I went to Germany, I didn't find any vinyl. I went to a vinyl store. They didn't have anything. And so I actually went to the box store. I can't remember what it was. It was like a entertainment store and had some other stuff. Went upstairs, and I bought the Best of KISS CD. Just because it had the German logo on it, because I always told myself, man, if I ever go to Germany, I'm going to buy something with the German logo on it just to say that I went to Germany and bought it. So I did, and it's sitting behind me right this minute, still wrapped, because I have no reason to open a CD that I already have the American version of. But anyway, so yeah, if anybody listens to this that can tell me a vinyl store in any of those cities that I need to run into and I might have an opportunity at, please do so. I appreciate it. Tuck, man, I always appreciate you joining me here. Thank you so much.
You bet, man. And safe travels, brother.
I'll see you in a couple weekends.
You bet.
All right, bye-bye. Kiss Talk is an Into Rock podcast production.